We're looking this morning at how do you handle temptation. The fact of the matter is that temptation is there. We can't avoid it entirely. It's always going to be some around. But how do we handle it? What do we do? What's our attitude toward temptation? And so we want to look at a few things along those lines. As we begin, we consider Luke chapter 22 and verses 40 through 46. And when he was at the place, he said to them, "Pray that you enter not into temptation." And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw and kneeled down and prayed, saying, "Father, if it's your will, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." And there appeared an angel to him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer, he was come to the disciples. He found them sleeping for sorrow, and he said to them, "Why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation." And so one of the things that we notice here is that temptation is there just waiting for an opportunity. And Jesus admonishes his disciples twice in these few verses to pray lest you enter into temptation. In the prayer that Jesus taught his disciples, sometimes called the Lord's Prayer, although I think probably it'd be better to be called the sample prayer, but Jesus there says, "Lead us not into temptation." That's one of the phrases that he uses in that prayer. And the idea that we need to be praying for God to help us in these areas involving temptation. But I want us to look at some different attitudes that we could have toward temptation. And we're going to look at some negative and some positive attitudes that we have toward temptation. We're going to look at some things in the Bible that are some things that people did that we shouldn't do, and some things that people did that we should do. So we're going to begin then with the first one, run toward it. Do you handle temptation by running toward it? You know, that's kind of sad, but there are many people who do. In Isaiah chapter 59 and verses 6 through 8, Isaiah says, "Their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works, for their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood, and their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they don't know, and there is no justice in their goings. They have made crooked paths. Whoever goes in them shall not know peace." And then also in Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19, he again says, "These six things does the Lord hate. Yes, seven are an abomination to Him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among his brothers." Now this, again, both of these passages talk about people that are in a hurry to go get into sin. They're running toward it. And we probably all know some folks like that. They're just running as fast as they can away from God and toward anything the devil puts in front of them. That's their sole desire in life, is to run toward temptation and therefore to run toward sin. But some go even further than that. These folks, whenever they see temptation, they run toward it. But we want to notice as well that there are some who actually go looking for it. They look for temptation. As if enough temptation doesn't find us on its own, there are some people who actually go out of their way to try to find some. In Matthew 26, verses 14 through 16, we find Judas Iscariot was one of these folks. "Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said to them, 'What will you give me if I deliver him to you?' And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time, He sought an opportunity to betray him. He didn't just run toward a temptation. He went and sought one out. You notice the chief priest didn't come to him. You know, you can imagine the chief priests, the Pharisees, they wanted to kill Jesus. You can imagine them trying to talk to each of the disciples to see if one of them might be a turncoat. But that's not even what happened here. He went and talked to them and said, "Hey, look, if I can get him turned over to you, what would you give me?" And so they worked it out with him. And then he started looking for a chance to betray Jesus. He was looking for temptation, and he found it. When you go looking for something, no, Jesus said, "Seek and you shall find." That's not only true of good things, that's true of wicked things as well. You know, it's often that someone who's been in trouble with the law, whether it be theft or drugs or any number of things, it's often the case that whatever caused them that trouble, whatever trouble they had gotten into with these situations, they may even move to a new area, away from their old cronies and their old friends that got them into trouble the first time around. They move to another place, and you know what happens when they get to that new place? They go looking for the same kinds of people that they moved away from, and they wind up right back in the same kind of trouble. If you go looking for it, you'll find it. But then we see that some indulge in temptation. They love temptation. They love to have that temptation come upon them, and they're just waiting and willing and ready to give in to any temptation that comes their way. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. They didn't just kind of face temptation and fall sometimes. They indulged in that temptation. If there was a temptation came along, as soon as it appeared, they just jumped right in. There was no fighting it at all. In 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13, Paul tells Timothy, "Evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." These are people who just indulge in temptation. And like those others, they look for new ways, new temptations. They run toward that temptation and they just indulge in it. They enjoy it so much. But then perhaps, if possible, this next one is even worse than the three that we've talked about so far, because this one not only runs toward it and looks for it and indulges in it himself, but he actually draws others into it. And so, that clicker will work one of these times. So he draws others in. He's not satisfied with just having the temptation himself or herself. These individuals actually get other people involved in the sin. That's one of the warnings that Paul gave to those young preachers, was not to be partakers in other men's sins. Because other men will often try to get you involved in their sin, that temptation. But these will draw others in. You know, it's very interesting to me. We talked several months ago about Jesus being faced with temptation by Satan. And you know what's amazing to me about that is that other than Eve, Jesus is the only person mentioned in the Scriptures who actually personally faced temptation from Satan himself. Now you think about that for a minute. All of the temptation throughout the Bible, all of the sin that's recorded that people were involved in throughout the Bible, and all of the sin that people today are involved in, the only two recorded cases of Satan himself getting personally involved were with the very first sin, with Eve, where he succeeded, and then with his three failures that are recorded as he tried to get Jesus to sin, and he failed with Jesus. But what's amazing about that is, then what we realize is, most of the time when people are tempted, That temptation comes from one of two places. James says everyone is tempted when he's drawn away by his own lusts. So sometimes it's our own desires that get us into trouble. But the other source of temptation, since most of us have never had the devil come and try to tempt us personally, most of the time when we're tempted, it's either, like James says, we're drawn away by our own lust, or some other person brings us the temptation, brings the temptation with them, or tempts us for Satan. You think about that. Anytime we draw others into temptation, like we're talking about here, anytime we do that, we're doing Satan's work for him. As if his job's not easy enough, we help him out. Anytime we do this kind of thing. And probably all of us at one time or another have been guilty of drawing others into some form of temptation. But we need to be sure that we don't make a habit of that. Galatians 2:11 through 13. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed. For before certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. When the brethren from James came, Peter was drawn into a temptation by them. They were keeping themselves separate from the Gentiles. Peter had been eating with the Gentiles, and he'd been having fellowship with the Gentiles before that time. But when they came, and he saw, well, they're keeping separate, he withdrew. And Paul says it was so strong that not only did Peter himself withdraw, but others followed Peter's example. They got drawn into the temptation as well. Even Barnabas. If you can imagine Barnabas getting caught up in that. After he had been so involved in teaching the Gentiles, to imagine him getting carried away with this idea, this sinful thought, and this temptation that was going on there. Matthew 18, verses 6 through 7. Jesus says, "But whoever offends one of these little ones, or causes one of these little ones to stumble, which believes in me, it was better for him if a millstone were tied about his neck and he was drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes." Woe to the one who causes somebody else to stumble. That's what he means by offense and offend there in the King James. Doesn't mean you hurt somebody's feelings in this context. It means you cause someone to sin. You, in other words, bring them into the temptation. You draw them into temptation and cause them to fall. Mark 8 and verse 11, the Pharisees came out and began to question him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him. They were tempting Jesus. You see, Satan wasn't the only one who tempted Jesus. The Pharisees were tempting Jesus. Oftentimes the disciples, even by the things they did, were tempting Jesus. But we often have been guilty in the past of drawing others into temptation, and we need to be sure that we don't do that. It's certainly bad enough to be involved in temptation yourself and get caught up in it and fall to that temptation, but you certainly don't want to bring somebody else in there with you. You think about it, when you're involved in temptation and you're giving into that temptation, you're on a sinking ship. If you're on a sinking ship, the thing to do is get out of that ship. Get in on dry ground or get to a ship that's not sinking. The last thing you would want to do if you were on a sinking ship would be get other people in the boat with you. That's not going to be a good plan. It'll just make that ship sink all the faster if you pile other people in there on top of it. So we need to be sure that we're not involved in that. And then we want to notice that one of the things that often people do, their way of handling temptation, is just blame God for it. Well, it's God's fault. I heard someone who had become an atheist blamed God because some pharmacist gave his mother the wrong prescription and it wound up causing his mother to die. And he blamed God and quit believing there was a God because of what some pharmacist did. Well, That doesn't have anything to do with God. But it's amazing how many times people will blame God for things that are not His fault. And certainly temptation is one of those things. Notice James 1, verses 13 and 14. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts any man. But every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. So James makes it very clear. God can't tempt you. You can't blame Him for your temptations. But how many times have we heard people say, whether it's an alcoholic or an adulterer or a homosexual person will say, well, God made me this way. I can't help it. It's the way God made me. They're blaming God for their inability to overcome temptation. Now, it's certainly true that some of us are tempted in different ways. Some people may be tempted to become drunk and alcoholic. Some people may not. Some people may never be tempted by that. Some people may be more tempted to lie than other people. Some people may be more tempted toward homosexuality than others. Some people may be more tempted to steal and toward covetousness and greed. Everybody faces different temptations, but James tells us it's not because of God, it's because of your own lust that causes that. But what's more, even if you do have a struggle with that area, that doesn't make it okay. You have to fight that temptation. Yes, you're going to face a temptation, but you've got to fight against that. And you certainly can't blame God for it. No one, we're talking about Judgment Day a little bit in class this morning, no one will be able to stand before God on Judgment Day and say, it's your fault that I committed these sins. Oh no. He gives you a way of escape, if you will take it. Notice then Genesis 3:12. And the man said, the woman that you gave me, she gave me of the tree and I did eat it. What's Adam really doing? Now, it sounds like he's blaming Eve. And to some degree, he is. But who's he really blaming? He's not really just blaming Eve. The woman you gave me. He's blaming God. Well, God, if you hadn't given me that woman, it's your fault. I didn't eat of that tree until you gave me that woman. It's your fault. And so he really put the blame back on God, not just on Eve, not just on the woman. We've got to be aware of that. Romans 7:7, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. I had not known sin but by the law. For I had not known lust except the law had said, thou shalt not covet, or thou shalt not lust. Now you think about that for a minute. He's saying, yes, the law pointed out what sin was. But the law wasn't the one that made me a sinner. It was my violation of that law. Violation of God's command that made me a sinner, not God's command. And he said, was the law sin? No. Absolutely not. And sometimes we have this, you know, we see this with children all the time. Have you ever noticed that whatever you tell children don't touch or don't do, that's the first thing they want to go do? And people say, well, see, that's the same way. When God said don't do it, it just made me want to do it. And well, that's not God's fault. You can't blame God for that. And we need to beware of that dangerous habit that some have of blaming God for their sin. Well, we looked at some bad things. Let's look at some good things. What should we be doing? What should our way of handling temptation be? Well, we should resist it. 1 Peter 5:8-9, be sober, be vigilant. Your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about looking to see who he can devour. Whom you should resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren all over the world. Now you think about that. Whenever you face a temptation, you're not the only one that's faced it. Other people have faced it and are facing it, and some of them are overcoming it. And you can too. You resist the devil. James 4:7, in fact, says, submit yourselves to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Did you know you can run the devil off? Now the devil's a supernatural being. He's a fallen angel. Certainly more powerful than a human being, isn't he? No. James says, you resist, he'll run away. Genesis 39:10. Sometimes you have to just be steadfast. With Joseph and Potiphar's wife, it came to pass as she spoke to Joseph day by day, he did not listen to her, to lie with her, and to be with her. She wanted him to spend time with her. She wanted to get close to him. She wanted him to sleep with her. He would not listen to her. He ignored her, in essence. He just went about his business, minded his own business. Now, you know, here's a case where he couldn't help it. He was a slave of her husband. He didn't have any control over his situation. You know, we might say, well, you know, if you got a problem on a job, you know, get move, leave it, whatever, get away from it. He didn't have that choice. He was a slave. Slaves don't get to choose. He was faced with that every day. And he just shut her out, went on and did what he was supposed to do, and ignored that temptation, resisted it. He wouldn't listen to it. Now sometimes we're in that situation where there's nothing else we can do except face the temptation and resist it. But the fact of the matter is, most of the time, we have some other options. And one of those is, we can flee from it. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22 says, flee also youthful lusts, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace, and with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Now you think about that. Sometimes you've just got to run away. 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee fornication. 1 Corinthians 10:14 says, flee from idolatry. Genesis 39:12, we see what happened finally with Joseph. Potiphar's wife got so aggressive, she finally just grabbed him, grabbed hold of his clothes and said, come on. And he left his clothes in her hand and ran away and got out of there. Now, we know it didn't work out too good for him because she was not only an adulterous woman, she was also a liar. And so she lied about what had really happened, and Joseph got in trouble for something he didn't do. But the Bible teaches us it's better to get in trouble for something you didn't do from man, get in trouble from man, to be punished by man for something you didn't do, than to do the thing and then face the wrath of God. So it's often, there will be situations. You know, sometimes we tell the kids, well, you know, if you just do good, it'll all work out good for you. It didn't for Joseph. Joseph did what was right and he wound up in jail. Now, in the long run, yeah, it did work out. But only after he spent some time in prison. God doesn't promise that if you do the right thing, nothing bad will ever happen to you. And we need to quit lying to children and telling them that. The fact of the matter is, sometimes even when you do the right thing, you're going to suffer some negative consequences that it's not your fault, you did the right thing. But you still face those problems sometimes, just like Joseph did here. But still, we need to flee temptation, because it's better to face punishment or the wrath of man than to face punishment from God or the wrath of God. And we need to remember that. Then we need to understand that another thing we can do is defend against it. Be prepared, as the Boy Scout motto says. Defend against it. Ephesians 6:13-18. Take the whole armor of God. You know, defend yourself. Be prepared. You know, no soldier would go into battle without his body armor and his weapon, would they? No, they wouldn't send a soldier out there without being prepared. They go through basic training and everything else to try to be ready. But instead, sometimes as Christians, we go wandering. There was a song used to say, are we walking into the enemy's camp and laying our armor down? Sometimes that's what we do with temptation. We just walk right up to the devil and take all our armor off and say, all right, shoot me. And then we're surprised when he shoots us. We can't live like that. We've got to defend against it. He talks then about some of those things, and he talks about the shield of faith wherewith you'll be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked. All the fiery darts, he says. Not just a few of them, all of them. We need to defend against it. And then he tells us also to be praying always in verse 18. But we need that armor of God to defend us. And then, of course, we can avoid it. You know, yes, sometimes we've got to flee it, sometimes we've got to defend it, but when we can avoid it, well, that's the best thing. If you never get to where the temptation is, then you don't face that temptation as much. You know, it's like the alcoholic should not go sit down at the bar and talk with the bartender all day. That's not a good plan. Avoid that temptation. I've heard of some folks that were recovering alcoholics would go so far as to look and find out where the liquor stores and bars were and actually drive when they go into work or back home. They go the other route to avoid driving past there so they wouldn't even see the signs that would tempt them to go in there and give in. And the same kind of thing, I've heard of people who actually quit a job and went to another place to get another job because someone on that job was causing them some sort of temptation in one way or another to such a degree that they were afraid they wouldn't be able to stop it. They wouldn't be able to resist it anymore. And so they actually went and got another different job. All sorts of things that people do. That, you know, if we're serious about it, if we're really serious about it, we'll avoid it. You know, Jesus talks about the extremes, and we think, well, we'd never go to that extreme. But he says, if your right hand is causing you to stop, cut it off. Cut that thing off. Maybe that's what Bobby was trying to do with that tractor. He's trying to cut it. No. But, you know, he says, if your eyes bite, pluck that thing out. Now, whoa, that's extreme. It is. But what he says is it's better to make it to heaven missing a body part than to go to hell with all your body parts. Again, the problems of this life are incomparable to eternity. And so certainly, you know, that would not be the first avenue by any means. And certainly we know he was speaking metaphorically and he was using some hyperbole as well, but because we know, you know, our hand isn't really what causes us to sin, is it? Our eye isn't really what causes us to sin. It's deeper than that. It's our heart and our mind. You know, there's where the sin is. But what he's saying is, you go to any length you need to go to stop that temptation, to stop from giving in to that and sinning. And see, I don't think sometimes we take sin seriously. I'm going to sin sometimes, so, you know. That is not the Christian attitude. That's not what Christ wanted us to have, that attitude. We need to resist it. We need to flee from it. We need to defend against it. We need to avoid it. We need to watch out for it. You know, sometimes we need to just be aware that it's going to be in certain places. Watch out. You know, it might be coming. Be ready to keep an eye out for when you see it coming. You can flee or you can avoid it. Luke chapter 21 and verses 34 through 36, he says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overfilled with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unaware. For as a snare shall it come on them that dwell on the earth. Wherefore pray always, watch ye therefore, and pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things." And you think about it. When has Satan gotten you in the past? You know, was it when you were tired, when you were hungry, when you were worn out after a day of work? When were you weak to that temptation? And then when you're in that same similar situation, watch out. It's coming. Be ready for it then. Satan's not going to attack you when you're at your strongest point. He's going to wait till you're a little weak. It's kind of like, you know, most of us come in contact with various viruses and bacteria all the time. Every day. And yet, most of the time, we don't get sick from them. But if, for some reason, our immune system is compromised, sometimes it may be, you know, certain medications that we're taking, you know, that have compromised our immune system. Or maybe it's because we haven't been sleeping, or we haven't been eating properly, or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, that we're worn down and our body can't fight the infection off as well. And that's when it gets us. That's when we get sick. The same thing happens spiritually. If we think of sin as a spiritual sickness, we don't get sick with sin when we're strong and healthy and facing those temptations off. It's when we're worn out and trodden down and frustrated and depressed or discouraged. Those are the times Satan will get us. And we've got to be aware of that. We've got to watch out for that. All right, then the last one that we want to notice is that we need to help others to overcome it. Instead of leading others into it, like we talked about earlier, help them overcome it. Work together to be stronger. We need to warn others about it. 1 Timothy 6, 9 and 10 tells us. We need to help those struggling through it. Luke chapter 22, verses 28 through 30. Jesus says, "You are the ones who have continued with me in my temptations." Then we need to pray for those who are caught up in it. Luke 22, verses 31 through 32. Jesus tells Simon, "Satan has desired to have you, but I have prayed for you so that your faith won't fail." We need to not reject others because of it. Galatians 4:14. "My temptation which was in my flesh you despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus." Now that doesn't mean that we don't condemn sin. Doesn't mean we condone sin and just let... No, that's not what he's talking about. But just because somebody is struggling with temptation and facing temptation, we need to be supportive of them, not rejecting them. And that's the attitude that we need to have. And then, of course, we need to exhort others to fight it. 1 Timothy 6, 11 through 12. Paul says to Timothy, "Flee these things. Follow after righteousness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal..." We need to be encouraging each other. You know, the fact of the matter is, we can't do it all by ourselves. We need to ask God for help. We need to ask our brothers and sisters for help. And we need to encourage each other. You know, I'm reminded of a little storybook, and I guess they made a play out of it, of Toad and Frog. Did y'all ever read Toad and Frog to the kids? Well, Toad and Frog have some great adventures, but on one occasion, Toad baked some cookies. And when he made those cookies, he said, "Oh, they smell really good." And he tasted one, and they tasted really good. So he went to Frog's house, and he took the cookies with him, and he said, "Here, Frog, have one of these cookies I had." And so Frog ate the cookies. Oh, and it was good. Tasted so good. They ate a lot of the cookies. And then Frog said, "You know, we should stop eating, or we're going to get ourselves sick from eating too many cookies." And Toad said, "You're right. Let's eat one last cookie, and then we'll stop." Well, they ate one last cookie, and there were still a lot of cookies left. And so Toad said, "You know what? Let's eat one last cookie." And so they ate one last cookie. "We really should stop." "Yeah, you're right, we should. Let's eat one last cookie." And then finally, Frog said, "We've got to stop. We need some willpower." And Toad said, "What's willpower?" And Frog said, "Willpower is trying really hard to not do something that you really want to do." That sounds like a good definition of willpower. It does to me. "You mean like trying really hard not to eat these cookies?" Toad said. "That's right," said Frog. So Frog put the cookies in the box and he said, "There, Now we won't eat any more cookies. Toad said, but we could open the box. That's true, said Frog. You know, let me tie some string around it. There. Now we won't eat any more cookies. Well, that's true, but we could cut the string and open the box. And so Frog said, well, tell you what. And he got a ladder and he put the box with the string tied up on a high shelf. He said, there, now we won't eat any more cookies. He said, you know, we could get the ladder and climb up there and get the box and cut the string and open the box and eat the cookies. And so Frog said, you know, that's right. You know what? He climbed the ladder and he took the box down, he cut the string and he opened the box. And he said, hey, birds! Took it outside and called the birds. Birds, come here. There's some cookies. And the birds came and they picked up the cookies, even down to the crumbs, and took them away. And then Toad said, now we have willpower. We don't have any more cookies to eat. And Toad said, you can keep all the willpower. I'm going to go home and bake a cake. Well, you know, sometimes we really do struggle with that temptation, and we struggle with that willpower. And oftentimes, we just can't do it alone. If you're struggling with your willpower and you just can't do it alone, if you need some encouragement and support, if you need the prayers of the church, if you need the encouragement of the church, whatever you may have need of at this time, if you need to respond to God's invitation in any way, please do so as we stand and as we sing.